Hi, Eddie here. Red and I have used Zencastr to record all of our episodes of Punk Rock Elite because it's easy, browser-based, and it gives us separate tracks that are easy for me to edit. It can also be used for 4K video too. Maybe we'll try that one day. It's really easy to use. It can do a lot of the editing for you, clipping out your ums and ahs, and adding an EQ to bring out the best in your voice, all from a single website. If you want to make a podcast but aren't sure how to go about it, then Zencastr provides everything you need to record, edit, and distribute your new show to Spotify, Apple, and a ton of other places that people get their podcasts. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use our code PUNKROCKELITE, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Punk Rock Elite, a podcast about NoFX.
Hello, my name Black Flag. Do a TV party. Oh, TV party. We're watching TV.
I've forgotten that song. But we're having another TV party today on Punk Rock Elite.
Absolutely.
I'm Eddie. I'm here with...
Red Redman, that's me.
Yeah. And so we're having another TV party because we're watching episodes 3 and 4 of Backstage Passport.
I really like these little... these ones that we're doing, you know, because we're trying to do a few different types of episodes at the moment.
Yeah.
We're doing Peer Pressure, which is like, you know, bands that broke at a similar time to NoFX. We've got Under the Influence, where we're exploring Mike's influences. And we've also got, you know, interviews and Backstage Passport. We're covering NoFX's reality show from back in the day.
Yes, as Red was saying, and we've still got the interviews coming up. In fact, we've just been speaking to someone very exciting about several potential interview episodes regarding several things. So we're pleased on that. That needs to be that's an email I've got to send after the show, after this recording. But it sounds like it's going to be well worth it. So there's plenty still. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us for a year now.
Yeah, well done. Well done for sticking with it.
it's pretty impressive for those of you who are up to date on everything we've been doing, or all the episodes, I should say. We did a best of on the 20th of March, so we could thank you. We just did a little, it was just like 40 minutes or so of some clips from various interviews we did over our first year, and it was quite a nice thing to do, actually. But we were going to do it, both of us, but Red has not been well. So
I've not been well, but it's that annoying low level of illness where, you know, it's been going on for days and I still have to go to work. It's absolute bullshit.
I thought, well, I'll let Red have some recuperation time where... I mean, because, I mean, in my mind, what I really wanted was like a real old school clip show. Like,
sure.
Like we're just going, oh, do you remember when Ali Bryce was in? Oh, yes, I do. And then a harp. And then, and then how they go, what was he like, eh? You know, that. But I didn't want to force you into that kind of nonsense when you weren't well. So maybe we'll do that another day. So I just picked some moments from guests that I knew would be pleased about it. And it even got shared to Karina Danike's stories. So that's that's me amped up. The Mefs shared it as well. Lots of people did. It was very exciting. Do listen to it because it's a good little sampler. It's basically our fat music for fat people. You can give that to people for free. And if they go, oh, actually, I think I might enjoy this, irrespective of it being so NoFX-centric, they might go, oh, actually, you know what? I will dig into that. We'd really appreciate that if you could help us out that way. So you've just been so wait a minute. You've been unwell, but you've still not just been able to hang out with the rabbits.
Yeah, I mean, well, I have been hanging out with the rabbits. You know, I've got two new pet rabbits, and they're amazing, and I spend all of my time with them. But I still have to work. You know, like but yeah, they're brilliant, and we love them very much. And one of them last night. ate a bit of a plant, which like terrified us, but she's fine.
Fine. Yeah. Yeah. Did you find out what the plant was and whether it's
a Tradescantia. So it is poisonous to rabbits, but she only had like the tiniest of bits and she's absolutely fine.
I mean, poison, okay. Poison is not an absolute term, is it?
Yeah. And it's like, it's how much you eat of it and what you eat of it. She just ate a bit of a leaf. I think if she would have ate the stem, it probably would have been worse for her.
Potatoes are poisonous to humans. Let's put it that way.
Really?
They're part of the deadly nightshade family.
Oh, fuck.
But you have to eat, like, you basically die of, like, overconsumption before you die of poison. But they, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that at all.
So saying something is poisonous is technically true, but isn't always, contains a lethal dose in a single mouthful.
Because alcohol's poisonous, right? That's what makes you pissed, is the poison.
Yeah, basically. Anything that damages the brain in what is a pleasing way to experience for some
speaking
people.
Of things that damages brains, oh. A lot of drug use on Backstage Passport today.
Yes, today is the drug one. Last time it was danger.
Yeah.
Last time it was dangerous. Not to say that this isn't dangerous. I mean, the way they chose to do drugs or where they chose to. We'll get to that in the main body of the episode. But yeah. Mm-hmm. By the time this goes out, when this goes out, I will be driving home from Glasgow International Comedy Festival, begging ever so much your pardon, sirs. So that's exciting. Going to be in Glasgow for the weekend, which is one of my favourite cities, and it is a great place to be. I'll have done my first roast battle, so I might still be upset at the bad things a stranger has said to me.
Who are you roast battling?
His name is Mick Cullen. Basically, it's the Old Enemies roast battle. It's England v Scotland.
Okay.
And apparently, they've got a ref from a neutral country. And I thought, there's no country in the world that chooses England over Scotland. That's insane.
No, surely. Malta, maybe.
Oh yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah. All right. If they've got a Maltese, but like, if they've got a Maltese dog, to be honest, I thought it was just a regular like sort of short spot showcase gig. And then once I found out it was a roast battle, I was too cowardly to back out. But it's against strangers. That's the weird thing. Normally, when you see a roast battle, it's like people who know each other very well and say dreadful things to one another, knowing that it is designed to be the way that friends say dreadful things about one another. In this one, it will literally be the first time I meet this guy will be just before the show starts. So we've basically just been sending each other information about ourselves, going, so yeah, feel free to make fun of that. So
that's well funny.
To be fair, do you know what? It's very strange. It's like a lot of people may not. We may have some roast battle fans on here. I've watched a couple since finding out I'm doing this. Apparently, there is a thing where you do just sort of exchange it and you sort of go, "Look, I'd rather you didn't talk about the mass shooting my dad did, or you know, like that kind of thing." Like that you are literally It's basically a sort of weird. Like what I assume is the first consultation with a dominatrix.
Sure, yeah.
Like
yeah,
sort
yeah.
of just laying out these boundaries and going, look, all of this is fill your boots with this stuff over here. This is not for you. And you go, okay, that's absolutely appropriate and fine. So that's what I'm guessing. Also, that the dominatrix thing will come back in the main body of the episode too.
Of course,
we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But yeah, so that's it. We'll find out whether I've upset Mick or Mick has upset me to the point of irreparable enemy-ness, but I still think having it in Glasgow at the Glasgow International Comedy Festival is stacking the deck.
And is this is going out before Manchester Punk Festival, right?
This is going out the Monday before.
Ooh, exciting. So I think there's like I don't think they've quite sold out yet. I do think there's like a handful of tickets, maybe like 50 tickets or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there's a couple of dozen tickets, a few dozen at most. It's really not not a lot. But if you've suddenly gone, oh, do you know what? Turns out I am free and able to be in Manchester for those 3 days, then do it. Come along.
Absolutely.
We still, this is a note that might not go in there. We still need to find a guest for ours.
We do. They did reply, and then we replied, and then they didn't reply to our reply, but we do need to sort that.
Yeah. If not, we'll work out something else.
Yeah.
We'd love to be a live interview, though.
We should work that out this week, so we definitely know what we're doing.
I think that is appropriate and correct. But stuff will be happening, and then you finish watching us, and immediately Punkiversity Challenge from the Midlife Punk podcast will be on. And then after that, the Hello and Hoof podcast with Danny Barrett from the Crash Mats. Mm-hmm. Basically, there's no need to go and see any bands at all.
No, no, no. Just podcasts. The Manchester Podcast Festival.
The Manchester Podcast Festival. The irony is that we wouldn't get a sniff of Manchester Podcast Festival. We'd be told pissed right off. Manchester Punk Festival. Oh, come in. So, yeah, we know which side our bread is buttered. Thank you ever so much. Or vegan spreaded in my case. So, enough of this. I'm making you talk about all this and you're not well. Should we just watch some telly?
Let's watch some telly.
We'll watch some telly. We'll be back after this commercial break. Backstage Passport, episode 3.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, South America, over and done.
Yeah.
We've gone. We've left. We two episodes and we did all of South America. Now, this is the Asian leg of the tour. These two episodes, really, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I also, I enjoyed the first two episodes so much. I actually watched the third episode in the same sitting as the first two.
Oh, cool.
I watched them all the way through. Because, it is a really enjoyable show. I know I said this on the last episode about Backstage Passport. Mm. If you've not given it a go, I would really recommend it. It's some of, the most accessible, easy to digest, NoFX content out there. I don't even think you need to be a fan of them to enjoy it.
No, I think if you're interested in life on the road, it's the sort of thing that, you know, I remember watching this with, I watched this with my friend Pete in Madrid, and we were watching it with his then girlfriend, and she definitely wasn't interested in NoFX as a musical outfit.
Mm-hmm.
This was very much out of her sort of catchment area of what she sort of generally would dig on. But she was like, well, I don't mind watching whatever. And she could tell that I was clearly excited about it. And she did sort of find it quite engaging. And she's like, well, the thing is that there's no real actual live music in any of this.
Yeah.
The closest you get to any real live performance is Mike singing in front of the hotel.
Yeah.
With all of those kids. And then he does about 4 seconds of it. And then it cuts to the actual pre-recorded music and stuff. So it's pretty smart the way they've done it, because they have made it so that if you're not that interested in NoFX as a musical outfit, as a touring group of musicians, you might find them interesting. And I think
it's absolutely done a really
great job of that. So we start off by going to Japan. Now, NoFX have been to Japan before. They know this seems a little bit weird in that they're sort of acting as if they've it's being presented as if Japan is this new weird place for them.
Yes, I noticed this.
And I'm thinking it isn't.
Because a big, they go to Osaka jail, which is like a dominatrix.
It's a bondage club thing.
Yeah, a bondage club. Yeah. And what I thought was quite interesting is, as you said, they're kind of acting like, oh, we've never done this before. This is so wacky. But at this point, they've released Wolves in Wolves Clothing, which has a song about a sucker jail. So they have been before.
The song was released at this point. This may have been filmed before that.
Oh, I see what you mean. I thought I looked at the
but the thing is, you can only really find when it was released. I think this was filmed in the year or two before, maybe 18 months before.
Because they do play some songs from Wolves in their live sets. There are clips of them playing Triple Rock, for instance, live.
Yes, so, that's true, but I don't know if they're actually playing that live or if that's dubbed over the top and made to appear live.
You might be. I thought that there was a bit where
I've scrutinized it a little bit, and I'm finding it tricky. I don't know.
Okay, no, that's interesting, because it was one of my questions, really, whether, you know, are we out of time here, or, as you've said, like, was this just recorded out of sequence?
I mean, this could have happened before, like, in the next couple of episodes. I think they're in, like, I think they go to Russia, they go to Israel, and is it 6 episodes or 8 episodes? Or anyway, they go to some other places. I don't know if they're showing this out of the order that they actually performed in, because they want to make a good narrative out of it. I don't know. It's the sort of thing that a reality TV show would do, but I honestly don't know. In fact, in some upcoming interviews we got, we may be able to get answers to those questions. So let's put a pin in those and see about that later. But what I sort of meant was the way it's sort of presented from like an editing perspective.
Okay.
He's talking about Japan. Like, they seem comfortable in Japan. They sort of seem to understand it. And I think that, I mean, there used to be a Fat Records Japan office.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
So,
yeah, for years.
So I think they're just including Japan because they're out that way anyway, and they don't go as often as they'd like. And they definitely, and the thing is, they said that they've sold 18,000 tickets to their show and they're like, this is the biggest headline show we've ever done. I'm going to assume High Standard played, because they're proper tight mates with High Standard.
Yeah.
High Standard, in fact, one of their members passed away quite recently, but they've been playing with them in their Japanese 40 Cities 40 Years tour. So
I think, haven't they been playing with Smelly and Melvin, and they've been referring to themselves as No Standard? That's what I've seen on social media.
That's very possible. Or they did one song like that. Yeah, something like that anyway. Yeah. But they were High Standard is so huge over in Japan. They're like an institution. It's like the biggest selling record on Fat, just because they're so popular in Japan. They're great High Standard. They're so much fun. But they've got a TV spot on this, and Hefe says that his favorite place is Shakey's Pizza, and the others look embarrassed and annoyed, which is funny. There's a great bit. There's two brilliant little clips in this thing here. Smelly doesn't appear to be there. I don't know if he just can't be asked, but Mike said, we're going to be mediocre, then asks the translator if she knows what mediocre means, which is... a little, who knows? But and then he says, most bands give 100%. We give 50. I'm like, where'd the extra 10% go, Mike?
Yeah, so you might be right. It must have been recorded before they recorded Wolves. Because, yeah, you would think if you'd recorded 60% in recent memory that you'd say 60%.
And, you know, how many shows of theirs did they open with 60%? It was that was a set list standard from then on.
I think they recorded this show, then they recorded Wolves in Wolves Clothing, and then they released Backstage Passport.
And they obviously used the most up-to-date music that they had available.
Yeah, that's our best guess at this point.
That's what I'd assume, because also, you know, editing it down, getting all the graphics done, and because they're sort of, you know, so anyway. Or it was being done at the same time, and maybe 50%, maybe the song was called 50% for a while, and then Mike changed it because he reassessed, and like 50 and 60 rhyme close enough for any rhyme scheme that he wanted, or the meter and stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
Wow, this is in depth. it's fine though. So yeah, so they do all that, and then Mike gives his answer to what is punk. Which is, it's good music played by bad musicians. But in this one, he says bad drunk musicians.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot. Is that his original quote? Because I have certainly seen
that
a lot.
He said it a few times. I don't know if he's quoting someone else or paraphrasing or what, but I've heard him say it a few times. And it sounds like a Mike line.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, the show is massive, by the way. You see, like, it's at 18,000, but like you look at that out there and it's like, And that's why there's not really much to say about it, because they're like, well, we know the promoters in Japan. Japan is not a sort of as shady and corrupt a place, certainly, as where they're going in this episode. But it just looks like a regular good show that they enjoyed.
Is this the show that Hefe is late for?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. No. He's on his best behavior here. No, this is the one where afterwards they go out. Before they get to Osaka jail, they see the businessman fight.
Yeah.
Now, I remember at the time when I watched it going, this is weird. This guy is just, this is really violent and unpleasant. And I'm just sort of wondering what the ethics were on this, whether they're like, oh, well, apparently in Japan, you don't need a release form to film drunk strangers. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, because none of their faces are blurred or anything, right?
Absolutely not. There is no anonymity for the man who's lost his shoes and is being beaten up in a flower bed, or the guy who's beating him up while still on the phone.
Yeah, it's quite funny.
It is funny, but it's still like, I don't know. I don't know why I get so hand-wringy about these sort of ethical quandaries, but because the guy's like beating this guy up without any sort of real anger.
I think they're just drunk.
They are very drunk, and there is that stereotype, or possibly even for a while, I think it was like an epidemic of sort of salaryman type people in Japan who, because they work so hard that when they let off steam, they let off all the steam at once and go absolutely balls out berserk.
Yeah. There's also, you know, so like historically, Western people used to, we sterilized water by turning it into beer. But yes. In the East, historically, they turned it into tea. Yes. So generationally, Westerners can generally, obviously not true for everyone, but Westerners can generally hold alcohol better than people from the East. It's a huge generalization. I'm sure some people can.
That's very interesting. I suppose
I went to school with a lot of Chinese people from Hong Kong and Japanese students, and they, you know, like they couldn't drink quite as much. It's a little bit of a stereotype, but it's.
I wonder if that's some sort of genetic, sort of like a sort of an adaptational shift. If people are drinking like small beer, like 2 or 3, because you only need like 1 or 2% alcohol in water to make it safe to drink. So they weren't brewing like strong beer, but
similar to like you know, Indigenous Americans, I think as well, because like alcohol was just introduced to them culturally a lot later.
Oh, so yeah.
Then they like can potentially have more problems with it, but.
But
we're not here for science.
We're not, no. But then equally, whiskey was a Chinese invention back in the long ago.
Oh,
as well,
I didn't know that at all. That's really interesting. Oh.
Maybe it's that alcohol is a sort of an occasion substance rather than a.
I think we've just got a problem with it over.
There is that too. Yeah, no. That is also true, and we don't. And we also don't know any of this to be a thing. But
and to be fair to the Japanese, at least they work fucking hard before they get shit-faced. We'll just get shit-faced on a Tuesday morning.
That's very true, actually. Yeah, at least they can look at their work and go, well, that's a job done. Right! And then rip open the sake, sure.
Fair play to them.
In fact, I believe that, you know those like capsule hotels where you just get like a pod?
Yes, absolutely.
That's, apparently, people like Western travel writers would go... What an incredible idea. You can just, because what else do you need? You just put your shoes in a bag, hang it on the door, lie down, go to sleep, wake up, you're in the middle of Tokyo.
Yeah.
And you go, that's good. And you go, do you know why those were invented? Or was that? It was so that businessmen who got blackout drunk could just have a place to lie down safely and then go to work the next day feeling absolutely wretched. Like, oh, what an amazing cultural experience. Yeah. Yes, that's right. And now... in London, that is called a two-bed flat. So, you know, it's not bad living in the north, you know. It's bad living in Britain, but it's not bad living in the north. This is where we meet Rugli, the guitar tech, and I don't think we see him ever again. Although,
oh, really?
Well, I'm not sure, but he doesn't appear sort of in many of the main stories from now on. But also what's quite fun is next to him is a guy with a beanie hat who looks exactly like that guy from I Think You Should Leave.
Right, yeah, sure.
He looks exactly like him, but he looks exactly like him now. And this is from 15 years ago, so I assume there's some sort of older brother or a cousin of this guy who got into like music management or something. Anyway, Osaka Jail. Now, I have things to say about this.
Yeah.
In this,
uh-huh.
Mike isn't out as an S&M enjoyer.
No.
He is talking as if he finds this weird and almost as if he finds it unappealing.
Well, I think that's what confused me and made me think that it may be out of sequence. Mm. Because I was like, oh, but you're playing, Cruel and Unusual Punishment, which is the song about Osaka Jail, over this segment. And I was like, oh, but if you've already written this song, why are you pretending to, not be...
Well, the thing is that when in Cruel and Unusual Punishment... He is singing as an observer.
Yeah, you're right.
He's saying, this is what will go down if you go to Osaka Jail. And it sounds...
Yeah, it's just a matter of fact, actually. It's not about...
He's not saying this happened to me. He's just saying this is stuff that happens. Yeah. And, like, he's already... He's got, like... I think he's got the dominatrix on his arm. Like, the Les Dom. But that's a Les Dom. That's not... And the caddy and stuff. It's like... He's already said that he's like interested in bondage, but from like basically like a lesbian pornography perspective.
Yeah, sure.
He's not cross-dressing. He's not really sort of openly talking about him being involved in any of that.
He's very male presenting throughout all of this TV show.
He is serving length. And what he does is, and also when someone's asking if he wants to be involved, he nominates Jay Walker.
Yeah.
He's like, when he says, there's a bit where she's, the Dom is pouring candle wax on him and then stubs the candle out on him.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike says, and I'm literally like, ugh. And he's got this big smile on his face. And he's like, or not like, but like, like, ow, like sort of feeling like a sort of a cringy ow feeling rather than a disgust feeling. He never actually exhibits disgust. He exhibits like a squeamishness, I suppose.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that he sort of was sat there drinking a beer, watching the show and not even mentioning that's the kind of shit my wife does. You know, it's not, you know, it's... That kind of thing. So it's an interesting little moment in the journey. Should we say journey? It's LGBT. Yeah, we'll say journey. Let's say journey.
I think you are watching someone uncover a kink in real time. And it is kind of generally how they start. You know, like you kind of...
I would argue you're maybe looking at someone covering a kink.
Yeah, even more interesting.
Like wants to go to Osaka Jail.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to witness it, wants to be adjacent, but is not ready yet to say, well, I am actually wearing some knickers under these Dickies shorts. Sure. You know, like I'm wearing a pair of frillies under here, but don't tell anyone. but yeah, so they witness a live sort of binding and flogging show.
I wondered if are you familiar with the more recent Lizzo controversy?
Is I know the one where she was going, "Why are all you lard-ass dancers shit?"
Oh right, yeah.
But that's the most recent one. I'm afraid I don't keep up to date with
Lizzo.
So
it was connected to that in that it was a complaint from her dancers,
right?
Basically, and it reminded me of this episode. Lizzo's dancers complained that Lizzo did a big party after or before one of her European shows. I think it was in Amsterdam. And she'd rented out like this sex club. And it was for all of her staff. It was for all of her crew, for all of her dancers, for everyone who worked on the tour. But there were sex show elements to the party. And during the party, some of the dancers complained that they were forced to participate in the sex show against their will. Things like, you know, rubbing that sex worker's breast being physically involved with sex workers who are currently performing. And that they claimed it was, you know, against their will. They didn't want to participate. And they were suggested that if they didn't participate, they would no longer be able to work for Lizzo. You know, sounds awful.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Anyway. I think I had heard something along those lines. Yes. Now you mention it.
It really reminds me of this because NoFX's crew are being taken to a BDSM dungeon and then volunteered against their will to participate. Now, thankfully, Jay fucking loves it.
I'm going to assume that it was known that Jay would love it. I suspect what is being semi-framed as as a revelation to Jay Walker is something that was well known amongst all of them. Like, oh no, Jay would be all about that. Because the next day he's like, oh mate, do you want to see my ass? And stuff like he's like, he's not like
he is bruised.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, he's having a. I mean, sitting on a plane after that, I'm like, it's like do what you want by all means. Please go right ahead, but have a think about it. Well, I am going to be sat down on a plane for a few hours tomorrow, so that's not going to be comfortable, is it? You know,
it's at this point that I've got in my notes. This just feels like a sitcom.
There are aspects of that, yeah.
This could be an episode of The Office, but, you know, instead of it being set at an office, it's about a touring punk band.
I mean, to be honest, Ricky Gervais tried that.
Oh, did he?
The David Brent movie was about him being on tour, wasn't it?
Oh, I didn't. I
didn't watch it because it sounded like it was going to be bad.
Yeah.
So I decided not to watch it. But yeah, essentially that. I mean, the thing is, I think any sitcom writer, irrespective of whether they're Ricky Gervais or not, if they were trying to write an on the road with a band sitcom, they wouldn't come up with this. It just wouldn't occur to them to be this fucking wild. That's the exciting thing about it, I think. And I think it is good that they do include the places where, like, it's fine. Like, oh, we had a nice gig there. You know, sometimes they're really trying to ring out. Like, there's that one in the previous episode we did about this where, is it Argentina or something, where they're just like, the promoter said, oh, you can't do an encore. Oh, no! Calamity! Yeah. You know, so it's like, they're trying to ring out any drama they can.
Yeah,
and in other times, they're like, oh, no. It's like they get a coconut. They go, oh, this one's got very little milk in it. We'll have to try and strain it out. And then another one, it's like overflowing. You're like, oh, we've got plenty here. We'll just take Jay Walker to Osaka jail and have him waxed. It wouldn't surprise me if that was actually written about that incident. Because there's like about the candle wax and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, that's Jay is thrilled about it. He's having a nice time. And then it also points out that everyone is having a nice time in Japan except for Kent.
Yeah, poor Kent.
He's got to go back. He's got to get a train somewhere within Japan, which, to be honest, I understand it, is basically like being on a nice holiday anyway, apparently.
Compared to British train travel.
Oh, but yeah, absolutely. And so, and American train travel as well. They're not famous for their good ones.
No,
unless,
yeah,
of course, you are a hobo in one of those open-sided ones from the past.
Those still exist, you know. You can still those open-sided cargo trains, I think.
The boxcars, are they called? I'm not sure. Yeah. They seem fun and frightening. Anyway. Kent is trying to sort out visas for Singapore because they haven't got them. And the office, like, I assume he needs to go to the embassy.
Oh, okay.
I assume he's going to the embassy because he's going to going there to get their passports all stamped with work visas because only a few of them have it. And he's like, well, given that they flog you for chewing gum, they're saying, oh, just come in on a tourist visa. He's like, no, they flog you for chewing gum. I don't want to bring people in and, you know, and then do a, you know, a full show, which is very sensible and appropriate. However, we see him with his 2006 laptop and his flip phone, and the rest of the band and crew are like just flinging fruit at him. Just pelting him with just whatever is in the room. It's and at this point, Kent gives a great line, my favorite line maybe in this episode, which is the crew song. He goes, and they're just throwing stuff at me and giving me hell because they want to see me die. We go to an advert break. He's gone back to Tokyo, presumably to go to the embassy, come back, and he's really, really pissed off. The others, the band, are just having a fun day off, and it shows them having a party. But like a really, really tame party where they're just like dancing around and mucking around, and it does look put on.
Yeah, it might be for the show.
And it might be just for a bit of, yeah. So, but he comes back with his work permits, with all the passports, hands them out to everyone, and he says that he's indispensable, and Hefe says, you're not indispensable. And he's like, oh, thanks, Hefe. And he goes, what does indispensable mean? He said, I thought it meant like despicable or something. He's like, Hefe honestly thought Kent walked in and was like, oh, I'm such an indispensable twat. I'm like, mate, you're not indispensable. No. So that was kind of funny. So that's Hefe. This is not the best misunderstanding of the English language that Hefe does. It's not my favorite in these two episodes. There's another one which I like more, but we'll get to it. So this is where Mike has a small panic in front of us, which I really, really like, which is when they've got
one of the most predictable panics ever.
Yes. Basically, the visa for Singapore, apparently, when you get this stamped in your passport, it includes the, you're allowed to come and do whatever it is in Singapore, right? And the, you know, ornate imagery and all that kind of stuff. And then there's a second one which says the handling of drugs or importing of drugs carries a death penalty.
Yeah.
And they're all like, what? And then Mike lists all of his drugs again and says, I've got prescriptions for those ones. And, you know, that may well be fine. Probably is. I can't imagine that would be a problem. They have enough.
You sometimes do have to talk to an embassy. But prescriptions should be helpful.
Yeah, and all that kind of stuff. And then it goes to and that's where they're all sat around together. And then it cuts to a thing of Mike just being sort of solo interviewed about it. And he's like, well, the thing is, it should be okay because I've got prescriptions for that. And then this, that, and the other. And then, actually, no, I'm fine. Do you know what? I'm not worried at all. I honestly believe if you get caught with a very small amount, nothing bad will happen to you. Really, mate?
Is that what you've gleaned from drug trafficking will be punishable by death?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're probably quite lenient.
Yeah, it's... he says that, and then the next thing you see is another one of those graphic splashes where it's like the plane, the globe spinning around, and it says Singapore, and it has a little, it has some statistics, which I have written down here. Singapore, records sold, seven. Drug death penalties, 382. Which is a brilliant bit of editing.
I did think it though, like the second, and I said this in the first episode we did on this, like when he was packing those drugs, I'm like, mate, you're going to Singapore, and not just Singapore, like basically all of Southeast Asia is really not okay with drug use. Like
No, very, 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 very strict.
You can get a hold of street drugs in like, you know, Thailand, for instance.
Oh yeah.
But like it's not legal in any Southeast Asian countries, to my knowledge. Like anything really.
There are sort of areas where it goes overlooked. Certainly,
yeah, exactly.
Western tourists don't tend to get the full extent of the law met out on them because they want to encourage tourism and stuff. And if you're doing
absolutely
it in the right place, if you get caught with you know, if you get caught with a spliff in Singapore, in the right place, in the, you know, then if you act the dickhead when a cop or accosts you, they may well, you know, sentence you to a flogging, and maybe your government can speak to their government, and you may get, they go, right, well, you've got to send them to prison in your country when they get home. You know, they will do maybe something.
But I know, like, recently in Dubai, for instance, there was a football coach who is, he's British. He's been put in prison for life because they found CBD oil in his car.
Yeah, well,
and that's, I mean, like, CBD oil is like 3%. Like, you may as well not buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? You know, when, and the thing is that there'll be loads of people going, fucking hell, CBD, I was just doing it for his fucking mental health, mate. It's all right, isn't it? And these are the same pricks who, when that, around the time Russia invaded Ukraine, there was the basketball player, female basketball player from the US who had a CBD vape.
Yes.
And she was in prison, and they were like, they basically had to hand over some fucking arms smuggler from US prison back to get her and some other people back. And people were like, hey, she knew what she was doing, fuck her. But she was, you know, a gay woman of color. So obviously everyone was like, well, that's fine. It's like, oh no, I'm sure she's being treated great. So they're in Singapore, and there's a brilliant, there's a great poster. I really, really like it in the airport. It's of a pair of hands close up, and it's got handcuffs, but just around the two thumbs.
Oh, right.
And it looks like something you could get at Osaka jail. It looks like, sure. It looks like, yeah, it's really weird. But it says drug is against the law.
Well,
there's no drug.
The war is that on drug?
No, this isn't drug. Oh, sorry, I thought it was drug. You carry on.
Plural drugs are fine.
Yeah, but yeah, you get caned for chewing gum publicly in Singapore. It's like,
wow.
I know. It's really, really weird. This is where Hefe goes for a walk.
Oh no.
Yeah. So Hefe is absent. It's a packed out show. Mm-hmm. Like, for given that they've sold 7 records, they've managed to fill the place. But again, I think it's one of those things where if punk bands just don't go there, if they heard a punk show is happening, people will go. It's one of those kind of things. So great, doing all that stuff. Everyone's at the hotel, and it is 9:05. They're about 10 minutes out from the venue, and the crew are at the venue, set it all up. Jay goes out and goes, the band like are nearly here, so wait.
Yeah, that's really awkward.
Yeah, kind of awkward. And then they're just getting, I mean, they go for a little break before Hefe comes back, because we want to, you know, what happens? Do the crew get out alive? You know, we need to know. So he has been to a branch of a franchised restaurant, which is associated with the country singer Kenny Rogers.
Right, sure.
So it's Kenny Rogers Chicken or something like that. And this is my favorite bit. I mean, possibly of the whole thing. It's really, really funny. It's Kenny Rogers Rotisserie Chicken, right?
Sure.
And he pronounces it Roasterserie. And he does this. Every time he says it, he says Roasterserie. And I absolutely love it. And he just sort of like, there's this one camera guy just waiting for him. He comes in, he's got a cup of coffee, he's got a cookie in a bag.
Yeah.
Like, he's brought his dessert with him. Like, he's all excited
about
it.
He's really happy. He's having a lovely time.
He's delighted, and he lists all the things he had, and he's like, he's like super happy about it. And then he walks into Kent in the lobby, and his face when he realizes that it's 5 minutes past showtime is amazing. He goes full sex doll
it's
shock.
9:05.
Really
what
funny.
Time are we on? 9. No.
Yeah, it's really, really funny. So they get to the venue. Smelly says we're the most dysfunctional organization or something like that. And it's like, yep. Smelly's not really in this one. It's because it's mainly about like bondage and drugs. So Smelly's like, nah, I'm reading. I don't know what he's doing, watching telly. And then Hefe blames Kent on stage. He goes, "It wasn't me. It was my manager." It's like, it was mainly you. But it turns out the gig was good.
Yeah.
Then we get to the bit that probably most people remember from this episode, yeah. I think. And it is pretty memorable. Mike buys some drugs.
Green drugs.
I wrote down in my notes, on this occasion, because we all know how Mike goes, "Hey, I like drugs," as we talked about in Home Street Home. And they're like, "Hey, do you want to buy some drugs?" "Yeah, I feel like doing some drugs tonight." And just using the word drugs sort of in this weird, vague way. This is totally appropriate because they've got no idea what they've just purchased. So the word drugs is as appropriate as it could be. I don't know. Like I've even seen people speculating online as to what it could be because it's got a very, very bright green tinge to it.
I thought I don't know if it is exactly this or it's something adjacent, but it looks like something like PCP. Would be my guess. Some sort of amphetamine that also has hallucinogenic properties.
Well, there were some people who were saying that something like a cocaine ketamine mix with something else flung in there would give a similar sort of... I don't know why we're giving tasting notes on this drug we didn't do. They chop out like several really wonky lines of weird green shit and like... They're not having a bit to try it. They're just going full whack on these fucking massive things. Mike feels photosynthesis.
Yeah, because he's obsessed with... He keeps saying that he thinks the drug is chlorophyll.
Yeah, I think he's just got fixated on the colour and is like, oh, like leaves. And he's just doing some run-on thinking. But I mean, maybe he does feel photosynthesis. We'll never know. Kent is a little more erudite about it. He says, "It feels like seven semi-trucks are hitting me, but they're made of marshmallow." And he does this slow sort of hand gesture towards his own face in slow motion and does this sort of big eyes, sort of frightened slow-mo thing. It's really funny. He and Limo and Mike have all done some. Some other people might have as well, I'm not sure. They are absolutely bollocksed.
They try and force Melvin to also have some.
Mike calls Melvin, and Melvin's like, "I don't want to answer the phone.
Yeah,
I know what this means."
Yeah.
And so then he goes up and knocks on his door, even though everyone's like, "Just stay in the room, Mike. We're not. This is, you know, I don't know if the adrenaline of knowing that this could be the last drug you ever do because you're about to be, executed is having any impact on it, but." So eventually Melvin goes downstairs because he's been woken up. He can't get back. And Mike is being all huggy and paranoid. Mm-hmm. But Mike's recall is incredible because he goes, "Remember when you did PCP in 1985 and you needed my help? Well, I need your help from this now." He's like, "All right, then fine." And then Limo's been out and brought back more.
Yeah.
Like they've had it all. And then Limo's just gone, "That was, do you know what?" And just hops off. It seems that Limo's able to handle this drug better than Kent and Mike.
Yeah.
He is massive, though. Limo's like a big, big lad. And he is Scottish. They do naturally absorb more drugs than regular people, don't they? So he tells Melvin to do some. Limo says, "Oh, no, you've got to do some because I was made of rubber and I was 10 million miles high."
Fair enough.
I honestly think some of these... That one sounds like someone wrote it for him. Someone who doesn't really do drugs wanted to sort of express what being on drugs was like. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Mel goes, "Actually, I will have some." And Mike says to him, "That is the worst choice of your life." And so they decide then, once all of them had a bit, they go, "Well, we should probably go out."
Sure.
Kent is like giving him a list of things that he can't say. It's like, "Don't say drugs, don't say hi, don't say green." It's like, "Green's probably all right."
Yeah, I think green's probably fine.
But, you know, he's like, "Just, right, you're drunk, okay? If anyone asks, you are drunk." He's like, And he's like, why do you keep telling me? He goes, because you're the one who acts the least normal. If you are in a friendship group where someone has to one day turn to you and go, look, no, I'm telling you because you act the least normal. It's a rough day, isn't it? You're like, oh, maybe I am the one who acts the least normal. The funny thing about this is that they go out in the car. The last thing that you see is Kent saying, right, behave yourself. And then on that night out, apparently everything was fine and no one was in any danger because they show literally nothing except for the next morning when they're all sat kind of quietly in the airport going, oh, just sort of having a bit of an unpleasant come down in an airport. And that's the end of episode 3.
Yeah.
It's a good episode. I think it's the Green Dragon bit, which is what they name the drug themselves. Mm-hmm. The Green Dragon bit overshadows the rest of it a little bit, maybe, just because it's the most dramatic. It's the most perilous, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's a really good episode. I also think it really overshadows the next episode, which I didn't enjoy episode 4 as much as the previous 3. It feels like it's not, you know, like humorous hijinks isn't, you know, like, it doesn't have like some big funny highlights, I don't think, episode 4.
Hello everyone, Eddie here. Red and I hope you're enjoying our show. If you have been and would like to help us make it a little more easily, then you can donate to us at our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/punkrockelite, or you can look in the show notes for our link tree. If you can't help us financially, we totally understand, but would love it if you spread the word to other people who would like this podcast. We thank you for your continued support. We massively appreciate it. Back to the show. I think with this one, again, it's because they're trying to wring narrative out of real life, and real life just doesn't have that many interesting narratives in it. Because a lot of real life stories go, and for a minute it looked like it was going to be bad, but it won't.
And it's absolutely,
like, it's not. Which is why, you know, sometimes people get like infuriated about like a romantic comedy where people go, oh, if they just explained that misunderstanding, none of this would happen. You go, yeah, well, then you don't have a movie. So, you know.
And I think also this is the first time episode 4. Where I also get annoyed with something that you've mentioned in a previous discussion about this, where everything is previously on Backstage Passport and coming up on Backstage Passport. It felt like a filler episode, I think.
I think they're doing more of it because there's less stuff to talk about.
Yeah, and also because they're retreading things that they've done in previous episodes, which... You know, previous episodes, you can be like, oh, we're getting ready for our first show. And you can do a whole section about getting ready for our first show. But that's not as fun to do for your third or fourth.
Yes. So episode 4 starts off with Mike saying, we're now going into weird Asia.
Yeah. It's actually at this point that I have in my notes, because I watched episode 4 with my fiance, Kate. And I think it was around this point she said out loud, I can't believe how racist this show is. Because there are some accents in this episode. There is some casual racism.
There is a bit. I don't think there's any sort of genuine racist ideology.
There's no genuine malice behind any of it.
It is very poorly communicated. It might have been fine in 2007. that's lots of things were.
It's a different time.
It was a different time. So they're going to weirdo. So Malaysia. Going to Malaysia. I like this bit because Kent is like, they're doing like an interview in the car on the way somewhere. Kent is sat next to Hefe and the cameraman's in the front seat and sort of leaning over and filming them. And Kent's going, no, this will be interesting. This is the first time that we've played in a predominantly Muslim country. And Hefe goes, Malaysia's a Muslim country. He goes, yeah. I didn't know that. He goes, well, you do now. In a very pointed sort of, well, you do now, so please behave appropriately.
Yeah.
Because because, okay, just do it.
You're probably not going to play Blasphemy on this tour.
And then Hefe decides to impersonate a member of the Nation of Islam.
Oh yeah.
He says, "Assalamu alaikum, my brother." Like the
scarf and stuff.
No. That was just, he just says, the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam is an African-American organization. And I believe he's imitating that. But it still takes a lot of, I can't explain it. I'm sure he can't either. So it's best, it's like doing it in the van. Fair enough, maybe. It's not going to cause any bother doing that. Anyway, so Abby didn't know. So this is one where they actually do show us some live audio, because it's them playing Leaving Jesus Land.
Yeah.
It's a sold-out show as well. It looks like people are going off. It's like, it looks super fun. Like the show, the kids are really excited and stuff. It's really good.
Leaving Jesus Land is on Wolves in Wolves Clothing, and who knows, you know, when these songs were written and recorded, whether they were recorded or written out of sequence and stuff. There is some definite live footage of them playing tracks off of Wolves.
Well, the thing is that I wrote that down, and now I'm doubting myself. I don't know if what they've done is they've blended the album track with the live, but it sounded like the vocal sounded different, so I don't know whether they used a demo or I don't know.
I think it was live footage.
I feel like it probably was live. Anyway, someone throws a headscarf onto the stage, and Hefe assumes that this is an invitation to wear it. So he puts it on and he starts talking about peace. To be fair, what he says, he's just talking about peace. But he's doing it in a weird papal address.
I'm pretty sure he's doing an impression of Yasser Arafat.
Oh.
Who was the Palestinian leader at the time, I want to say. I might be completely wrong. Global politics, not my best area. But I'm pretty sure Yasser Arafat was a global figure at the time, who famously wore
he was Palestinian
that scarf.
Political leader. He died in 2004.
Yeah, so he had been assassinated like 2 years before. I'm pretty sure he was assassinated.
He'd been assassinated within 5 years, easy, comfortably. Within 3 or 4 years. Two, maybe, yeah. So he's doing that. In a Muslim country. And basically, some lad gets. I don't know. I get the impression he shouldn't wear it because it's, whether it's for Muslims only or if it's just he just felt that Muslims were being the butt of the joke or that he was making jokes about Allah.
I think he feels it's being disrespectful. And you know, if he is doing an impression of a recently assassinated political leader, I get that.
I can see that. Yes, maybe, but but the thing is, and then he sort of starts sort of a weird chanty thing or something. I don't know. He starts saying stuff, and the audience reacts very, very strongly. he goes back into the crowd, and Mike then says, "Is it okay if we do a song by another band?" And they all go, "Yeah." It seems like they're very happy for this to carry on. It does appear to blow over quite quickly.
Yeah. I think it's a small contingent have been briefly annoyed by it.
A bit of a storm in a teacup, but people don't seem to feel it like to be ending. And then Mike asks if being a lesbian is illegal. Not to quote Vic and Bob too harshly, but you wouldn't let it lie. And then the funny bit is that Mike says, then Hefe pissed off some Muslims. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Are lesbians illegal? What is... He does this a lot. It's like, maybe that's why...
Loves being like, oh, and then they were annoyed at you. And like, Mike, they were very much annoyed at you.
Yeah, come on, darling. And then he said, never had a shout out to Allah at one of our shows before. there's a bit which makes for uncomfortable listening when Mike refers to it as someone threw a towel on the stage. You know, that's not a towel, Mike.
Yeah,
not great. But they basically nothing bad happens as a result of it. So again, it's sort of not, there's no real fallout to it. It's like a bit of a storm in a teacup. Like
that's why, like, I think this episode is a little bit,
it's middling, isn't it? It's mid.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen so much chaos in the previous three, you know, like, oversold venues and, you know, shows,
non-existent venues.
Well, exactly.
Escaping from dirt plots and stuff like that.
Almost upsetting people isn't quite as interesting.
Yeah. So then we go to South Korea.
I didn't even know they went to South Korea.
Very briefly.
I didn't even notice.
Very briefly. So that in South Korea, the only other bands to play there were the Slackers and Ensign. And I don't know if that was a joke or not. I'm like, South Korea, sure, maybe punk bands, maybe sort of, you know, punk.
I think they were specifically talking about punk bands, and it might be the case.
I'm sure loads of American rock bands have played in Seoul, South Korea. You know, the connection that those two countries have had since the Korean War.
Yeah.
There'll have been cultural exchanges and shit like that. So I assume they meant like bands from their scene. So
yeah, I think they mean punk and hardcore bands.
Yeah. And the Slackers as well. Reggae bands. But so basically, the reason they include South Korea is because they weren't allowed booze at the venue, the kids, so they distribute some bottles of booze to the crowd. Mm-hmm. And we never find out anything more about that. The show was fine. This is where the annoying wannabe groupie gets backstage.
Oh, yeah. I think this is, you know, like, this didn't... So remember, I watched this episode with my partner, and I think if I would have started with episode one, I think she probably would have got on board with the series.
Yeah.
But I think starting with this episode, there's just, like, a lot of not very... what's the word? Like, I don't think the band are very...
They're not very sympathetic.
Yeah, exactly. It's difficult to side with them because they are also being dicks in this episode.
I don't know that they're being... I mean, like, certainly, like, I think Jay's, like, making fun of that lass. And that lass seems heightened in some way. She doesn't seem well. But she's, like, it starts off quite reasonable, to be honest. Well, reasonable from Mike's perspective, when she's, like... Oh, hello. Oh, you're in the band. And she's like, oh, so do you have a... She's like inquiring as to his relationship status.
Yeah.
And he's like, yep, I got a wife I'm married to for 14 years and I don't cheat on her. Now, that sounds sort of blunt, but I'm sure this is not the first time he's been approached by a lass after a show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just thought, you know, like, there's probably an easier way for her to be removed. Like, you do have access to security.
Yes. I think that they probably
didn't need. I don't know.
No,
there's
but
ways of removing people without also being mean.
I mean, I guess that. Well, this is the same guy who said, "Don't be mean to Yolanda." But then, you know, she did then start, you know, sort of harassing him, haranguing him for various things and all this kind of thing. So it is very. Her behavior is dead annoying. But you know, also we don't know how this shit's edited, so. Who knows what's gone on, but she eventually leaves. And she's sort of like, oh, no, but the thing is that if you were to come out with me, I can show you all of the really cool stuff. And he goes, I don't hang around with chicks. I'm married. I don't do that.
Sure.
And I don't consider that exchange to be particularly objectionable.
No, it's not at all. Yeah. I don't think it's very good TV, though.
It isn't great TV, no. The only really sort of bit with any entertainment value is when she starts like picking on his like badges and stuff, going, oh, what's all this, what's your shirt say and stuff, and it's like, that is just a damaged person being weird.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it wasn't funny, I'm just saying that's what it is. But then it lasts about 20 seconds, that whole sequence.
Yeah,
it's like really, really brief. But like you say, this being cut up and put on TikTok or Insta Reels, all of this still works for that, because it is really tiny little. It's just that these stories aren't as fun as the previous episode,
yeah,
or
absolutely.
I would imagine the next episode and stuff like that. And then, so yeah, so Mike's putting his foot down. It's all annoying. Then they go to Taiwan. No US punk band has ever been there, according to all the information they can find. And it's almost like they haven't been there because there were 25 people. This is that really tiny one. There is a promoter who they speak to, who I think is Australian, judging by his accent. And like, he's the most optimistic guy in the world because he's like, 25 tickets got sold. Hopefully we can get it to 30. Then we've got a punk rock show. What? Sorry, what international law is this? That you're like, well, it's the rule of 30. 30 people, that's a punk rock show.
Well, it's probably the number that the venue will allow an event to go ahead, because it means they won't lose money on staffing.
I mean, to be honest, they went ahead anyway, so maybe they got that extra five. Mike then asks, do we have any big NoFX fans in tonight? And is met with silence. And then it's suggested, and I don't know if they've just put this on over the top, but it then suggested that they went into the decline. Which I think is a brilliant power move. So any fans of us in? Nothing. Crickets.
Decline.
Fine then. It's great. There's a stage diving 60-year-old man.
Right, yeah.
Who appears to be, I'm guessing, like, you know, I would assume that he was like, grew up in the States or something, moved to Taiwan for work, and is now just sort of one of those kind of guys. Is like, sort of, you know, oh, I used to tear it up in the 80s. Oh, I'm going to go to this punk rock show this evening and show the young ones what it's all about. Instead, he just flings himself on some kids. They get paid enough to cover dinner.
Yeah.
Hefe then says, after that show, I'm thinking of doing landscaping around LA. Hefe's just becoming a high-end gardener as a result of this. He's like, do you know what? I'll just do that. They're losing tons of money is the sort of theme of this episode.
Yeah, and I mean, that's even before they get to the next gig.
Yes, and to be honest, this sort of first section, because we've got the break now, it does pick up in this next section. Mm-hmm. When they get to Beijing in China, that whole story is a bit more interesting. There's a bit more substance to it.
Yeah.
But it starts off on, it does start off weakest. I think this is probably the weakest episode because it starts off weakly and doesn't manage to pull itself back up to the heady delights of any of the South America stuff or anything.
And I think it's weird because I think they go to interesting places. Like to go to South Korea, Taiwan and mainland China in one episode, but for it to also be, you know, one of the worst episodes doesn't make much sense to me. Like, those are cool places. You should definitely be able to get cool content from that.
Well, yeah. So we get to Beijing after the break. They've literally got government approval. No US punk band has ever been allowed to play mainland China before.
Yeah. This seems mad.
Yeah.
And like, so, mainland China. Like, I would have imagined them to do Hong Kong, but mainland China is insane.
Basically, you need to apply to the Chinese government. And I believe back in this time, the relationship between China and the US was a little more amiable than it is now. Not that it's always been, they've always been holding each other at arm's length. You know, it's just one of those things. Yeah. But this is one of the, you know, it ebbs and flows all the time. That's just one of those things. So this was just luckily when they were doing this, they were able to, for whatever reason, get through all of the bureaucracy and be allowed on. So, which is weird. And like, you can see Mike's really, really thrilled about this. Like, because he loves doing shit no one's done before.
Yeah, he, you know, like, I think that he can see it being written in the annals of punk rock history.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
whether they exist or not.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they do, because he's made the museum. So, he made the museum just so we can put this fact in it.
Yeah.
It's tucked away in the back by the gift shop. So they have a 60 agency press conference. There are 60 outlets there.
Yeah.
And they don't really do much with it. They just sort of go, oh, yeah, we're going to play. We heard it will be fun. And also the press conference, just notice this, the press conference is held in a building called the Cool Music House.
Why not?
Like, that is a brilliant bit of direct translation, isn't it? But Cool Music House in what are they, Mandarin? I don't know. Again,
yeah, in mainland China, Mandarin.
Exposing my ignorance. But in Mandarin, I imagine that Cool Music House, that's like, that sounds great in Mandarin. And then you translate it directly into English. You're like, guys, what? So, yeah, basically, they're doing this press conference to prove that NoFX is actually playing because loads of people think it's a scam.
Yes. Yeah. Which is well funny.
That is brilliant. Like, how there wasn't more made of this and a bit less of the you know, like, spend more time on this story because there are little bits that you can go into. An extra 10 or 15 seconds into that would be really, really interesting. Like apparently, like, it'd be interesting to see if they've got evidence of, like, when people claimed NoFX were playing before. Like, yeah, they said we played here 3 years ago and we didn't, you know, and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's just sort of, Mike decides to moon them. Fine, sure, why not, to prove that they were there. And then they have a meeting. They have to leave because they've got a meeting with the promoter, Jason. And it was at Hot Pot Paradise, which is very funny if you live in the north of England.
Hot Pot Paradise, that's just Lancashire, isn't it?
It's basically Lancashire, yes. Delicious. So they go there. Mike points at, and it's got all of these sort of live seafood tanks that where you choose what goes in your hot pot. And there's all of these different things, like not even just like sort of oysters and lobsters, but like sort of very unusual stuff, sea anemones and all sorts of weird things. I can't remember. I didn't write them down. Mike describes it as food that's not good, but expensive because it's rare. It was like, he doesn't look impressed. And it's in a room that's called the KKK room.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And that is when Limo and Jay are making KKK hoods out of their napkins.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
They do that very briefly. It's on screen for like 2 seconds. So they're like, oh, we're in the KKK room. Hello, ooh, look at us. It's kind of funny. So Jason the promoter is basically snake oil in a pair of chinos. He's like, sure, like the fucking sketchiest geezer in the world. It's quite incredible. And I saw on the YouTube video that I watched, someone described him as sounding like a Bond villain because he's got like this English accent. Like, I don't know if he was he might have been, it's possible if he went to like a boarding school in Hong Kong or something.
Yeah, or England as well,
like, or maybe in the UK, in fact. Yeah, but he is just a liar. He's like,
well, it sounds like he is a liar, but also he is actually trying to be very truthful about, you know, the difficulties of running a capitalist operation in communist China.
Yes.
Because there are some issues which don't seem very beatable. That there are just a few, you know, like touting, for instance.
Well, yes. Well, let's put it this way. Apparently the band paid $50,000 to secure the venue.
Yeah.
So they've already paid 50 grand to do the show.
Such a big number.
It's insane. And he's like going, oh, you know, no, the Chinese are great at counterfeiting. It's like what they do. And it's like, all right. No one else has heard of that, mate, but sure, whatever. He's like, no.
I think he may be correct. Be right. I think one of the difficulties is like a lot of, because so much manufacturing is done in China.
Yes.
Little things like the scanners that will scan your ticket will probably be manufactured in, you know, domestically.
Yeah.
So like and because they are a much more tech savvy nation, there will be someone who knows how to hack that system, how to create duplicates, how to,
absolutely.
Pass on all of the barcodes that haven't been sold to a third party for them to tout. I do think like there are.
There are, but Kent makes the point. He goes, well, what did we pay our $50,000 for?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, surely that is what we've paid to prevent.
Yeah.
You know, fair. And that's the thing. It's like, if they were just going to show up, you know, and all this kind of stuff, I'm sure there is truth in what he's saying. He may not be giving 100% the truth. He may be exaggerating the truth. I'm sure there is some truth because there's, you know, problems with ticketing. But it's when he says, like, to be honest, I'd be more confident selling a NoFX show than a Bruce Springsteen show.
Yeah.
It's like, but would you though?
Well, he would might have though? The... I did think this was interesting, an interesting thing to say, because he might personally have better connect... Like, he might know how to sell to punk rock fans more than he knows how to sell to classic rock fans. And I also don't know what Bruce Springsteen's cultural impact in China is. Like, there may be a chance that a young punk rock band does have a little bit more selling power.
I imagine for a period of history, China were not going to be thrilled about their citizens listening to Born in the USA.
Exactly, right? Like, even though it is critical of the American government, I still think that
it's in a language that most of the population don't have a sufficient grasp on to get that meaning from it. And we'll just hear the fist punching Born in the USA bit. The irony will be lost on them, as it is many of the people who enjoy it, for whom English is their first and only language.
But one thing I think is really interesting, I do think at this point you start to go, oh, hey, Mike, maybe there was a reason why you're the first punk band to play China. Maybe other bands have expressed interest in touring to China and realized the counterfeiting issue and the touting issue, and that it's going to be very difficult to get their money back, so they decided not to do it.
Yeah, that's true too. At this point, NoFX are probably as wealthy as they've ever been.
Yes.
And as such, and like I said, the fact that they're making this movie will have offset some of those, or this documentary will have offset some of those costs.
I think it's very clear that they are happy to piss a world tour up the wall as long as they get good footage of it. Like, it's clearly meant to be an experience and adventure, not a money-making operation. And through them having the documentary there, they know that they're not going to lose shitloads of money and that there is some value in it and there is going to be something useful to broadcast at some point. But I don't think they're actively trying to make a profit from these shows.
No. But equally, their sort of reticence, or not reticence, their lackadaisical attitude towards it makes it more difficult for Kent, who's wanting the shows to at least be safe.
Yeah,
and and, you know, not result in, you know, they nearly had riots in South America and all of these things. They're like, it's okay if we don't, like, I'm sure Kent is like, look, I'm getting paid. Everyone is getting paid. This is all fine. We're not worried about this. He's like, I am worried about it financially because I'm your manager and I've got to talk to the accountant one day. And he'll go, well, where's all this money going? Oh, we went China, spent 50 grand and then nothing. Like, well, you know, that's ridiculous. Don't you know, I can't just tell the IRS that. And they're just going to go, oh, yeah, sure. That sounds normal and good. Like, well, we do have a video of it if they want to watch it. You know, it's like... So he's got that, but he's like not too worried about that kind of thing. But he's like, I do want to get the money that we're owed, if there is any, you know, and all this stuff, which is why he's like, this Jason guy is fucking sleaze and all this stuff. So apparently there's 600 tickets gone, and he's like, no, it'll definitely sell out. You're bigger than Bruce Springsteen here. And Melvin says, are we talking about the same Bruce Springsteen? Which is really, really funny. Most people buy on the day.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I've been to comedy shows where people have said that shit, and I've still still sat there and gone, holy shit, on my own, I outnumber the audience. That's insane. So I've never trust a promoter who says things like that. And then Mike says, yeah, that's the thing. They charm you with dinner and then don't pay you at the show. In a grave portent of things to come. So instead of all that, they go to the Great Wall.
They do, don't they?
They do. And this is like the 40-minute lull of an Edinburgh show.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because they sort of, they get to the, they all sort of stand at the top of the Great Wall of China, and then they all call home. They all call their family and stuff.
Yeah.
And get a bit sort of, Melvin gets a little bit philosophical, which is very sweet coming from Melvin.
For context, the 40-minute mark in a stand-up show is normally the bit where the comedian starts talking about how their dad died.
Yes.
Or, you know, like there's some sort of pathos, some emotional development.
In a narrative-driven stand-up show, what has become known in the UK as the Edinburgh Show because of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, mm-hmm. Instead of just doing your best hour, it became popular to do a more narrative-driven show around a theme or a particular event. And then there was a period where there was the Dead Dad Show.
The Dead Dad Show, yeah.
Which is, and it doesn't have to be a dad, but it was very popular for male comedians to do stuff about, thing is, right, never used to get on with my dad, right? And now he's gone, I won't be a better father than my little boy. Do you know what I mean?
That is a very good impression of Russell Kane's Edinburgh Award-winning show.
Yeah.
Back in 2000 and...
It was around this.
11.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that.
Something like that. And then there was a lot of that kind of stuff. Some people were doing shows about their dads when they were still alive, which I thought was jumping the gun a bit.
I actually think it's 2014 now, thinking about it, but it doesn't matter.
It's very possible. Wow, 10 years ago. Yeah, 40 minutes is the natural time for people to subside. So what you do is you lean into that by getting emotional about it. And, and that, of course, was when my dad came back from the hospital that day. And he won't smile in no more. And then he goes, oh, no. And then you do a callback to a time you'd done a fart at the end. And everyone goes, oh, it was a comedy show. So anyway, use that. US comedians don't seem to get too hung up on that. They just talk about which minority group has upset them the most on social media this year. So there you go. It's two countries divided by a common language. They're at the Great Wall, and it looks great. The footage is nice. You know, they're having a nice time, and they're all like I think there's a bit where Smelly answers the fingers, "Hi, Mama." Like, do you call your mum Mama? That's so sweet.
He is white trash.
He is white trash. Yeah, that's true. He's white trash. Oh, of course, I should have realised. Anyway, yeah, it was nice. Then they leave to discuss the fee. This is where they say it's 50 grand for the venue hire. Just bonkers to me.
It,
I'm like,
it does seem insane. I mean, do we get any confirmation of the capacity of this venue? Is it like an arena?
I don't think so. No, I don't. I honestly couldn't say.
Insane.
But yeah. So Kent says 50 grand means no one should be getting in for free.
Yeah.
And Jason's like, no, that's not how it works. If we were putting on a sports event or anything, no, most people would be in on counterfeit tickets.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's sort of like, yeah, fair enough, but then like that really needs to be made clearer. Point of booking.
It's like, all right, and the crowd is pretty wild, but they don't know how to stage dive.
Yeah, so funny.
They wait until between the songs when there's no music, then they get on stage and jump off.
Yeah.
And they sort of like, NoFX teaches them how to
they
stage
try.
Dive. Yeah, they try, yeah. It's quite sweet, really. I thought that was kind of fun. There's also a brilliant bit where a kid blindfolds himself and then jumps in the crowd.
Yeah.
That's kind of great.
It more dangerous.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, do you know what? That kid's a fucking mad lad. So, yeah, I like it. Mike really likes it because he was like, that felt like a 1985 punk rock show where none of the kids knew how to stage dive and everyone was like, what is this? This is weird. So, yeah, he was like, that was really, really cool. Kent is still doing his job, though, still focusing on the money. And then he's told that, oh, no, there's literally no money.
Yeah, well, they actually owe them money, don't they?
In the end, yeah. Mike says that he doesn't care about the money. And at the airport, Kent is on the computer and says, oh, we've just been sent the report. We got a red, meaning they've lost money. We owe them. And then Mike says, oh, I'll tell you what, send him this message. Send him, we'll be sure to let people know to go with you if they want to make no money in China. Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, zing, mate.
I thought it was quite funny that they received that. Like, they discussed money and everything. They discussed settling. But then they don't actually find out that they owe them money until they're at the airport where they... Like, they're no longer in personal contact. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You'd think that would be made clear when they meet face to face.
Well, it was because Kent's asking for the numbers. He goes, "I can't give you the numbers till I've got the show report myself. As soon as I have it, I'll send it to you."
And that is fair to be fair, like, because you don't.
Yeah, no. That's
you
that's
do not... normally wait a like a day. Like, it does normally take like up to 24 hours for all of that to be.
No, yeah. I didn't consider that to be unusual. It was the obvious thing of, oh, guys, do you know what? Wish I could tell you differently, but looks like we've all lost money on this. It's like, well, why on earth are you in this business if all you do is consistently lose money? Because you didn't. You got 50 grand off of NoFX.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those things. And that brings us to the end of episode 4. And the two episodes we're talking about today, I do agree with you. Episode 4 does sag a bit, doesn't it?
It's only because I think like they go through a lot of, you know, like tedious issues. You know, like in previous episodes, they're, you know, trying to not get executed for drug use, and then episode they're it's like, we've lost some money. It's
they're,
like, not as
they're smuggling themselves and their gear out of a a police cordon, you know.
Which I'm like really surprised that you can even show a lot of that retrospectively, you know, like, oh, we did all of these illegal drugs in Singapore. I am kind of surprised that you know, like what you were saying earlier about like even people's faces aren't really blurred and stuff.
Yeah,
like I am really impressed by how much how broadcastable this is.
I'm going to assume that the Singaporean government have better things to do than chasing four people who did drugs once.
Oh yeah,
in Singapore, they're not looking for an extradition treaty to, you know, and they're not, and they're defo not going back. So they're like, well, well done, you won. They're not worried about that.
Yeah,
the two drunk businessmen. Maybe they just went, well, do you know what? What's the likelihood of them watching our stuff? Because those guys will be you know, in their 50s now.
I think
those
that's
two
the case.
Geezers, you know, and they're just like, well, you know, what's the worst that can happen? They're never going to find it out, and stuff like that. You know, I mean, they showed themselves committing crimes in, was it Peru where they, where they evaded police capture, and all that kind of thing. But then equally, it was like, were they also being shaken down? Was there an element of police corruption in there? Because they're like, well, we need to get permits and then bribe the local constabulary because some places just work that way, you know. Yeah. Again, I imagine the Peruvian government are like, there's no point. You know, they're just going to let it go. And again, if they went back, maybe they'd shake them down for a bribe then if they found out they'd come in. But they're not going to.
Yeah, they clearly know that they're not going back. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, maybe that's why we're looking at the this being at point of recording, you know, like NoFX's final tour, because they're like, well, we can't go back to a lot of places.
Well, that's the funniest thing is that whenever you see on Instagram or Facebook NoFX saying new dates announced, we're doing Eindhoven in the Netherlands or something like that,
yeah,
and you go, oh, hooray, as always the first person is always say, come to Brazil. always. And I get it, Brazil. If you're listening from Brazil, big love. I know some people from Brazil have listened to this show before, and I'm sure it's not you who's just demanding things of bands that are unreasonable. It's specifically you, I mean, but just there's a reason people don't go. It's because it isn't going to work well enough for it. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It isn't going to be worthwhile, and especially for bands who are less financially successful than NoFX. You know, you can't expect smaller bands. You know, I see people doing it on like the Meths put something up, and they're like, "Come to Brazil!" I'm like, oh, darling, they're a long way away from that being able to do that kind of a thing.
Unless Alice Cooper does a tour in Brazil and needs them to support again.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that's very true.
I imagine they're doing that London date because they are, you know, a local support.
Oh, no, they're doing the whole tour.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, it's only...
Oh, that's brilliant.
Glenn Matlock's doing the London one for whatever reason, because Primal Scream can't.
probably, you know, being from Scotland, don't fancy going all the way down to London.
Yeah, no, I imagine that. Yeah, makes sense. He probably lives in London, to be honest, Gillespie. But yeah, it's a strange lineup, isn't it? Alice Cooper, Primal Scream, and the Meths. It's a bit
It is really weird.
It is a bit like...
I do think it's been picked by someone on Alice's team who doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. I think they've looked at it and gone, Primal Scream, they sound heavy. And, and then they've just like, you know, asked for a band who's doing well at a certain price point, and someone's gone like, oh, the Meths are doing all right.
Yeah.
Just kind of like gone with it.
It does that or Dice. They've just rolled a D100 a few times and gone, okay, and that is your lineup, Alice. Alice is going, yeah, whatever. Don't interrupt me. I'm on the eighth green.
Yeah.
Just rent me a good snake. I'm guessing anyway. I don't know how Alice Cooper works. I'm looking forward to watching the. Is it two episodes or four episodes left? I can't remember if it's six or eight.
I don't know either.
I think it's an even number though, so we've got maybe one or two more episodes of Backstage Passport. Do you dig Backstage Passport? Go on.
We'll be doing season two as well,
of course. You know. But I think that one's presented as a movie, so I don't know how we're going to do that.
Maybe in two parts or three parts. We'll see. We'll see what we think.
Yes, that makes sense, doesn't it? So, yeah, do you like Backstage Passport? What are your feelings on these two episodes? Because we got to the difficult fourth episode, which didn't quite work out for us.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that's the only new one you've got to watch, because you'd already seen if you'd seen three and four fresh for this, you'd be like, oh, well, you know, four wasn't great, but oh, three was good, but you'd already seen three. So,
yeah, I had already seen three. So
you'd already unwrapped your present on Christmas Eve, hadn't you? So, but that's all right. We'll have a look at those. We'll leave that and we'll jump into the outro. See you in a bit. That was a bit. So we're back. There we go. Good fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad that we're watching these. I think it's nice to have like different types of episodes. We're obviously doing the interviews. We're doing peer pressure about bands that broke, same time as NOFX. We're doing Under the Influence with bands that influenced NOFX. And we're doing Backstage Passport. We've got lots of things to share on Punk Rock Elite at the moment.
There's still plenty of NOFX centric stuff to come from us. And we haven't even mentioned the Punk and Droblick tribute album that is currently at the mastering stage. Bands are submitting their songs right now.
Some really good stuff as well on there. Like I heard Zero Cost's submission the other day.
Yes.
I think they went back in the studio three times perfectionists, and it does sound good.
It sounds
like,
great. Yeah, absolutely. Fair
really
play.
Impressed.
If you're going to go back three times, then you want to be putting that back out. You know, that's what you want to have at the end of it. You know, so. So we're very, very lucky to have that going on. If you're interested in getting a copy of this, and we will be bothering you to buy it when it comes out, because it will be for charity. Charity yet to be decided, but we'll be working on that too. How do you want it? Do you want it CD? Do you want it vinyl? Are you happy with just the download? What are people's feelings on it? We'd like to know, because we have feelings. What do you want? So, yeah, all of that. What have you got coming up, Red? Anything?
Well, I'm looking after this pair of naughty bunnies, which is...
All right, put your tits away.
I love these rabbits. I love my new rabbits. They're the best. They're called Porridge and Raisin, and they're just awesome. We've got Manchester Punk Festival coming up.
Yes, we have on Friday.
Absolutely, yeah. I should probably mentally prepare myself for that.
Yeah, and do you know what? This is 2 weeks in a row where I'm going to have to. We're going to have to record this, and I'm going to have to fucking mix it. You know, produce it on the same day. That's all right. I don't mind. I'd love to get to a point where we've got a few in the bag. We'll do that. We'll get it sorted. You can't come and see me in Glasgow, because that'll have happened by the time this has gone on. Oh, I'm doing a gig on Wednesday night, 27th, for Vic Slayton.
Oh, great. She's great.
She is great. I'm very, very pleased about that. So, yes, do listen to Midlife Punk Podcast for other information about us, do go ahead and spread the best of year one around, because I think it's a really, really good slice of all of the stuff that we do. And that was just the interviews. There was no album deep dives. There were a few little outtakes and bloopers and stuff I put in there as a little treat in the middle. And yeah, that's about it. So thank you very much, Red.
Thank you, Eddie.
And we'll see you all next time. Bye, 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 bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Punk Rock Elite. It was a Pick Scraped and Fruitcake co-production by Eddie French and Red Redmond. If you're not following us on Instagram or subscribe to the podcast, please do. The main theme and production was done by Eddie French. Please contact us at punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.